Now we turn to a study of 1 Samuel chapter 27. Before I begin, may I just say that I wonder whether you recognized the voluntary that our dear organist was playing during the offertory. It's an old choir anthem that we used to sing at home, whose words are, "Lead me, Lord, in thy righteousness, make thy way plain before my face. For it is thou, Lord, only, that makest me dwell in safety." It would be very difficult to find anything more apposite in relation to the message of this chapter today. And it has been an enormous encouragement to me to think that the Spirit of God harmonizes all parts of the service in the way that this has happened this morning. And I've been blessed and encouraged in that lovely piece of music. Now, this chapter, the options in the matter of interpreting it are really only two. Either we take the chapter in terms of the continuing saga of David's experience as a fugitive from Saul, comparable in many ways to modern resistance movements and subject to the hazards that such guerrilla warfare must inevitably encounter. If we look at it in this light, we face the same kind of problems in the ethical sphere that we've already touched on earlier in the story, problems as to whether it could ever be morally defensible in a war or a crisis situation to act the kind of deception that David did here and continued to do over a period of a year and 4 months. The other alternative, and I think this is the right way to look at it, is that it indicates and gives strong evidence that David made a wrong move at this point in his experience, and indeed seems to have suffered a lapse of faith. And this, it seems to me, is the value of the chapter for us. For it shows how this can happen and why it can happen, and shows the consequences for spiritual life. Perhaps it would be useful and pertinent by way of introduction to look back to something said by Saul in the last few verses of chapter 26. When we studied chapter 24, the story of David's sparing Saul's life in the cave, I did say then that the message in chapter 26 was much the same, because that was a second occasion in which he spared the life of Saul, when he could have slain him and rid himself forever of the pursuit and the hatred of that king. But Saul, in the end of chapter 26, at verse 21, says this: "Then said Saul, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool, and have erred exceedingly." These are fateful words indeed, at the near end of a life that went terribly wrong. For the next time we read about Saul in chapter 28 is when he was at Endor, in that macabre scene in his encounter with the witch of Endor, dabbling in occult practices. What an inglorious end for the man who was once the Lord's anointed. I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. And just how much he played the fool we'll see in the chapter next Sunday. But there are different ways, you know, of playing the fool. And there's a sense in which we could truly say that David played the fool also in this chapter. And we see the consequences of it in chapter 29. And it was only by the providential mercy of God that he was extricated from the consequences of his folly. The difference between Saul's behavior and playing the fool and David's is in some senses analogous to the difference between Judas Iscariot and Simon Peter. Judas betrayed the Son of Man for 30 pieces of silver. Simon Peter denied his Lord 3 times. And I think it's a misunderstanding of the situation to suppose that somehow Peter's sin in denying Jesus was much less heinous than Judas's in betraying him. They were both the same kind of sin, both equally heinous. But the difference lies in the reaction of the two men. Peter went out and wept bitterly. Judas went out and hanged himself. Peter, with heartbroken repentance. Judas, in unavailing and graceless remorse. That was the difference didn't lie in what they had done. The difference lay in their attitude to what they had done. And I think you find the same contrast between Saul's playing the fool and David's playing the fool. Now, it's very easy to sit in judgment on Bible characters. But our concern must not be to be critical of David here. For the chapter mirrors what we ourselves so often do in similar circumstances. And as we say, the pot cannot call the kettle black. Rather, we seek to learn from the chapter in such a way to be forewarned and forearmed against similar mistakes in our own lives. First of all, then, just a word about whether there was in fact a mistake, a wrong move made here by David. Because, for a time, it might have seemed that David benefited from the move. For we read in verse 4 that Saul no more troubled him and sought no more again for him. But as we read on in the chapter, we become aware of some fateful and telltale signs that convince us that something was wrong. What I mean is this. In the story of Saul, one of the impressive and solemn things we see is that his was a story of privileges neglected and belittled and opportunities wasted and commands of God disobeyed, leading inevitably to hardening of his heart and his finally becoming a castaway. That was how his heart was hardened. Privileges neglected, opportunities wasted, commands disobeyed, and in the end, the sorry confession, I have played the fool. And saddest of all, it could have been so different if only he had hearkened to the voice of God. Now, I think something of this pattern can be seen also in David's story in this chapter. Because what we see in this chapter is a gradual change in David's character. Unwanted acts of cruelty and barbarity. An implacable attitude to his enemies, and lying and deceitfulness. He lied to Achish. He had been attacking these tribes, and when Achish asked him what he'd been doing, "Oh, I've been fighting against the south of Judah." And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath. He had to kill them all, you see, in case any should have escaped to tell Achish, king of Gath, what he had been doing. Now, you see, that, it seems to me, shows a David out of character. And when we get out of step with the Lord's will, even though not in open rebellion, perhaps only through waywardness and foolishness, there is inevitably a loss of spiritual stature involved. And in indefinable and yet unmistakable ways, one's life is marked, if not in our own eyes, in others' eyes. And it's always a matter of misgiving when you hear people say, "He's changed, you know. There isn't the warmth, there isn't the generous spirit there now that there used to be." They could have said that about David. And that, it seems to me, is one of the incontrovertible evidences that David made a wrong move here. The imperceptible hardening that does things to one's life and character. Telltale signs indeed. But our concern this morning is to look at the beginnings of all this, because after all, prevention is better than cure. Compare the first two verses of chapter 27, for example, with chapter 22 and something that is said there in verse 5. In chapter 22, verse 5, the prophet Gad said unto David, "Abide not in the hold, depart, and get thee into the land of Judah." Now, that was said to David the last time he stepped out of line and left the country. This, you see, wasn't the first time. He'd gone to Gath on a previous occasion and had been rebuked for it. Gad the prophet said, "Get back to Judah, where you ought to be." And this seems to indicate that there was, in some measure at least, a failure on David's part to get the message. How else would he have acted as he did on this occasion if he hadn't? Now, we need to see what is said in verse 1. Because it's what is said in this verse that sets the scenario for all that happened. And 2 points in particular need to be noted. First, we are told that David said in his heart, I shall now perish. I must escape. He said it in his heart. And then it is said that he felt he should speedily escape. Now, these are two very significant references, and we can learn a good deal from them. First of all, the decision to escape was not voiced. It was not articulated. He said it in his heart. And this bears witness to the power that certain kinds of thought can have on men's lives. I remember being very impressed with something Martin Lloyd-Jones once said in a distinction that he made between a man speaking to himself and letting self speak to him. Now, do you perceive that distinction? Speaking to yourself means that you are in charge. Letting self speak to you means that you are not in control. And that's what happened with David. And it quickly gained the upper hand. That's one thing. And then the reference to the word speedily seems to indicate that the situation bore all the marks of sudden panic. And we wouldn't be off the mark if we said that the whole thing seems to have suddenly hit David and devastated him and drove him to this panic reaction. Now, let me give you one or two illustrations of this from the Old Testament and the New Testament. You remember how it was with the mighty Elijah after that marvelous confrontation with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And then Jezebel threatened him. And what we see in the mighty Elijah is a man all of a sudden crumpling. It is enough. Now, Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers. Now let me die. He had often scorned Jezebel's threats, but this time something happened and something snapped, and he was plunged into the depths of depression and despair. There's another occasion recorded in the book of Nehemiah. And I have often been intrigued with this one. Nehemiah and his companions were building the wall of Jerusalem. They were surrounded by enemies, but they went on with right goodwill and resolution. And then this verse, Nehemiah 4:10. Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. And our adversaries said, they shall not know neither see till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease." Now you see, all of a sudden, that happened. And all of a sudden, there was a panic reaction. It's hopeless. It's useless. We can't do any more. There's another remarkable illustration of this same kind of thing in the Acts of the Apostles. Listen to these words. Paul in Corinth. "When Silas and Timothy were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the spirit." This is an unusual kind of phrase. But it seems to me that the correct interpretation of it is that Paul was laboring in the word. hard pressed and more than a little discouraged and up against it. Now, that's the kind of situation in which the phrase, "the straw that broke the camel's back," becomes very, very relevant. And in such circumstances, whether in Nehemiah's day, or in Paul's, or with Elijah under the juniper tree, or here with David, it is very easy to feel that you can't go on any longer and that you must give up. That is how David felt at this point, and that was his danger point. Have you ever been there? Is that where you are today? How then does one cope with this and avoid the pitfalls that David fell into? Well, in David's case, we find ourselves saying, if only he had shared it with someone instead of keeping it bottled up within his own mind and heart. We have seen David in an earlier chapter, when confronted with perplexity and dilemma, consulting the Lord and saying to God, to Gad the prophet, bring hither the ephod. If only he had done that here. If he had done and had articulated his thoughts, saying, oh God, I can't take more of this, he might have heard God's whisper saying, oh yes you can, David. Oh yes you can. Consider the divine response in these three instances I've mentioned. Elijah under the juniper, now let me die. The angel of the Lord came and said, rise and eat, for the journey is too great for thee. And he went on the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights. Nehemiah, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish so that we are not able to build. We can't go on any longer. And Nehemiah stood and said, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. And Paul pressed in the spirit, laboring up against it. And I suspect that towards the end of his second missionary journey, he was a very tired and weary man, and he must have been feeling, I can't stand this anymore. I can't stand more of this. And God said, oh yes you can, Paul. And if Paul was saying, I can't stay another day in this terrible place, how wrong he was proved, because he stayed another 18 months and preached mightily. And out of that place, God called out a people for his name. This is what God said in the vision. Be not afraid, but speak and hold not thy peace, for I am with thee, and no man shall set upon thee to hurt thee, for I have much people in this city. People who at that point were still in dead in trespasses and sin. But through this man's preaching, who felt he couldn't go on a minute longer, God called out a people for his name. Now you see, David deprived himself of divine help and succor by not sharing and not communicating at this time. One cannot help wondering, you know, whether in fact David had overstretched himself at this time in ways that were unwise and had brought stress upon himself. Chapter 26 records the very thrilling and very exciting episode of David and his companions going down to the camp of Saul and stealing Saul's spear and his water bottle as he lay asleep. How easily he could have slain Saul, but he didn't. And there's a sense in which this marvelous story shows the magnanimity of David in his treatment of the Lord's anointed. But one wonders whether he was wise. In doing that and engaging in that second exploit. The first one was different, you see, and it was one thing to have spared Saul's life when in the cave, because he was hiding from Saul and Saul didn't know he was there. But it was quite another thing to have deliberately gone down to the enemy camp. The thrill and the tension of that wonderful to read about, but was it a wise thing to have done? And was this momentary depression here an aftermath of overdue strain flowing from that daring exploit? Maybe there's a word here for students who've just finished their CU mission. Now would be the time, you see, when reaction would set in and a sense of flatness and exhaustion and depression. Are the students feeling like that today? Maybe this, in the providence of God, is a word for you. What we have to remember is that one of the most difficult things of all when one is overstrained and tired is simply to stop in one's tracks and just rest. And when we fail to do so, of course the whole picture will be suffused with lurid colors and become a distorted picture and indeed an unreal one. And that's a danger point for spiritual life. And at that point, David took panic action and fled to Philistia. Now, one of the important lessons for us to learn here is that in such a state, under such tension, and up against it, we are in no fit condition to be making important decisions about our future. Decisions that can have a far-reaching effect on our future ought not to be made at such a time on the impulse of the moment. For the impulse is very likely to be wrong. It was wrong here, and it is so often wrong in our experience. We panic. We're up against it. We're under pressure. And we feel the need to do something. And we may well be saying, I can't take any more. I can't go on any longer. That's sometimes how resignations are made at business, in business life. That's sometimes how the Lord's work suffers default, when people feel they can't go on any longer. This is a danger point. Wait. Consult. Think. And especially wait. But there's something else also. Panic reaction in David here prompts one to recognize that when panic is present, the evil one is never all that far away. He delights to stampede us into rash and ill-considered behavior. Now, I'm intrigued that this should be the message this particular morning. And I am wondering whether there are people in church today for whom this is a very relevant message. Are you being stampeded into rash and ill-considered behavior? Ill-considered action? In church? At home? At your work? In business? Is this a word for you today? Impulses of whatever kind, and especially those which come with tumultuous force in the mind, need to be treated with very great caution and looked at very carefully indeed. Try the spirits, whether they be of God, is good apostolic advice. Try the spirits. You see, David didn't try the spirits. It would have been better for David if he had called for Gad or Abiathar and said, "Bring hither the ephod to inquire of the Lord. Should I do this? Lord, you know what I'm feeling like. I'm at the end of my tether. I feel like doing a bolt. Tell me if that's what I should be doing. If only he had done that." You see, the whole question of discerning between the voice of God and the voice of evil spirits arises here. And I think we can categorically say that sudden promptings and impulses which assail our minds with great force or with nagging persistence do not come from God, for that is not how God speaks to his people. God is not a nag. And that's a very good working principle for Christians. If there's something nagging away at your conscience, I think you can assume that it's not the good Lord who's doing the nagging, because it's not in his nature to nag. I have found it enormous help in my spiritual experience to apply this kind of criterion to such situations. I say to myself, look back at times when you have been most sure that the Lord has been leading you and guiding you in a particular way. And then ask yourself, did that sure leading come in the way that this thing has come? And merely to put it that way makes the situation very clear, because we say, no. In those times I've been most sure of God's leading. He hasn't led like that. He hasn't nagged. He hasn't come with sudden prompting and impulses, assailing my mind, bludgeoning my mind, pressurizing my mind, making me miserable, and thrashing up feelings of guilty conscience. That's not how God speaks to his people. And this is especially true when what these impulses suggest is an irrational or ill-considered course of action. The trouble is that we often don't see what is irrational or ill-considered. And this is why it's essential to seek the advice and the corroboration of a spiritual counselor. Have you ever considered what might have happened if David had called one or two of his mighty men aside in the cave that day and said, "Now look, this is what I feel like. I'm at the end of my tether. I want to escape. I can't stand it any longer. Tell me what you think." What would they have said? What would you have said to David? I think you'd have said something like this: "Oh, come on, David. Come on, David. I know you're under pressure, but God isn't dead. God is the one great circumstance. You are his anointed." Remember what Abigail said to him in last week's chapter? "You have a destiny, man. You have a destiny. And a man is immortal until his work is done." Now, there's a real catch here. Sometimes people say, "I will not look to the advice of another, but will trust God to guide me." But then, it could just be, you see, that the fundamental mistake is being made at the outset, and that the voice of the devil is mistaken for the voice of God. After all, the devil comes as an angel of light. He's very persuasive. And it's altogether too simple a solution to say we're going to listen to none but God. If all we mean by that is, in effect, and this is all we generally mean, that we're listening to impulses and promptings which may not be from God at all. Tell it to another. Can God not speak through a wise and spiritual friend? It's better to listen to the voice of a human, consecrated man than to the voice of an unhallowed and alien spirit, however spiritual the latter may sound. And that's always a factor in our experience. The devil is very adept at coloring a situation and distorting a situation. Now, it may be that for some this is speaking in riddles, but it may also be that for others this is shedding a flood of light on a personal situation. And maybe this is God's word for somebody today who, but for having heard this, would go and do what David did, and in a panic reaction, feeling they couldn't stand it anymore, go and do something that they'll live to regret. Is that God's word for you today? Listen to it. I love thinking of Paul the Apostle, feeling in his heart of hearts in Corinth, tired and weary and under pressure. "I can't stand it another day." And God whispers, "Oh, yes, you can." That's how God speaks. And he speaks it with a smile of love on his face. You like that today? You feel you can't go on any longer? God's saying here, Oh, yes, you can. Rest in my love. All will yet be well. May God bless his word to us all.